All right, go ahead. Say it.
Infants on Thrones is the greatest podcast in the world.
In the universe. Say in the universe.
In the universe.
Read this part right here.
You can find them on the web at www.infantsonthrones.com.
Right, don't forget the like. Go ahead.
Don't forget to like them on Facebook to get special access and updates on what is coming next.
It's actually access, but excess works too. Okay, here, do this.
Thanks for listening. Can I go to bed now?
Okay.
This is Infants on Thrones. The philosophies of men mingled with humor. We are the core.
Hello, this is Glenn Ostlund. And I've got to start this off with a bit of a disclaimer. I really don't know why, but this subject has touched a nerve with a lot of people. Some have really loved it, but others, well, it sort of makes their blood boil. Personally, I find it fascinating. But if listening to a self-proclaimed psychic is not your thing, you might want to skip this one. However, if you want to go for a little ride and hear some off-the-wall, mind-bending kinds of things, then you might really enjoy this episode. So let's get right to it.
I was like, what? I'm getting a PhD at Princeton. I'm not going to go out and become a psychic. Like, those are crazy people.
This is Krista. She is a Mormon psychic. Now, she hasn't always been a psychic, and she hasn't always been Mormon. It all started, basically, with a kundalini experience she had while meditating. Yeah, that's right. Kundalini. Say it. It's fun.
The first time it happened, I was in a meditation, and my hands and my head started to shake. And I, went out of my body, and I couldn't come back in. And my body was, shaking, and I was off the ground. I was on the tailbone and the very tip of my head, and something was pulling me in the air. I've never felt anything like that before. It was amazing. And it was, my body was so hot that everybody else came out of meditation because the room got so hot. It was like I had lit a fire in my body. Kundalini is the energy that lies latent at the base of your spine. So when you unleash your kundalini, it's like you've reached bliss. And the kundalini, it goes up all the way through your body, up to your head, and then back down, and it clears out what we call in yoga all your chakras, so all your energy centers. And I kind of experienced it in that way too. Like I would hit particular parts of my body and just releasing, I think, blocked emotions.
Before this experience, she'd basically been repressing her psychic abilities for most of her life. It was weird. It was scary. As a kid, she could... Oh, this is going to sound cliche.
I see dead people.
I guess if that was me, I'd want to shut it off too. And for all the skeptics out there who want to chalk this up to some kind of imaginary dementia, you'll be happy to hear that she suffered a massive head injury when she was a child. Her husband, Ryan, thinks there's a connection.
As a child, she also broke open her head, which I think is a lot of people with these gifts had some type of a...
massive head injury.
Yeah.
But that's just from my, my friends and stuff. Usually there's some kind of head injury involved. I had fallen when I was 2 out of a high chair, and I hit the back of my head so hard, I split open the front of my head. And then I had, learning problems. At first I couldn't read for a long time, and then when I was in high school I in remedial English. Okay, and now I'm getting a PhD at Princeton and can read in 4 languages, so yeah. It worked. Right. And all of a sudden I was super smart, and I was also a musical prodigy as a child, because I could get music. And I think that's where I really poured myself into, and all these feelings, because I can feel other people's feelings. I would go into a hospital and pass out just because I couldn't distinguish my own feelings from the feelings of the people in the room, which has been something, it's just a work in progress, I guess, learning to distinguish the two and to protect myself from being a sponge all the time.
Who wants to be a sponge? So let's look at a few things that Krista believes she can do. First, there's this thing called reading. It's not really fortune telling, but it kind of is. A little.
And I also also, I call it reading people, so I kind of can tell you about your past and your future and kind of where blockages are.
See, but when she says past, she means past lives. And when she's talking about blockages, she's talking about past life trauma. Ryan explains.
Krista and I, we both believe that, you know, there is reincarnation. And so as we go through these life cycles, there are certain things that we're learning. And we also pick up, you know, it's karma. We pick up blocks and we have traumatic events happen to us in past lives. And those carry forward. And present
lives. They carry forward. Sometimes you don't even know. I think I've noticed with people, like, you know, well, what happened? This particular thing happened when you were three and it's very traumatic. And I can kind of take the edge off of that and kind of
Energetically heal some of the trauma that your body holds and your spirit holds. And she's really interested in helping people get through those blockages so that they can continue progressing in other aspects of their lives.
All right. So she can help people unblock trauma. I guess that makes her a soul healer or something. But she can also heal in other ways.
I can see, I guess, people's energy fields and see where things are blocked. Or I do medical intuition stuff too, so people have a health problem and they don't know what it is, or doctors don't know what it is, and then they come to you, or they've been diagnosed with that, and I can tell you if that's not right, or if that is right, or which route to take for treatment, or...
Well, just some specifics. My dad will never admit to this, but his back was hurting so bad he couldn't even walk, and he was going to go to the doctor the next day. And Krista's done massage, and so she offered to massage his back for him, help him feel better.
But I wasn't really... I did some massage, but really I was doing energetic corrections on him, but I didn't want to tell him. That's terrible. I usually don't do that, but
Is that Reiki? Is that what that is?
Well, it's very beyond Reiki, okay. I would call it. Reiki is like kindergarten, you know. No, it's great. Yeah. It's just kind of like, I am giving you universal life energy, and... That's great if you're not as intuitive, you know, but I can be more direct. Like, then let me put my hand somewhere and hope the energy goes to the right place. Like, I'll find exactly where it needs to go and correct where it is instead of just sitting there giving energy. I move the energy around.
And she doesn't just do this for people. She's an animal psychic, too.
I also talk to animals, which is something I love to do. And
she helps cats pee in the litter box.
Yes, that's something a lot of people come to me for. No kidding, that's my most common animal call. Is the cat won't pee in the litter box. So I have to talk to the cat and figure out, they always have a different reason. I know, isn't that ridiculous? But it helps people.
Okay,
you know,
what are some of the cat's reasons?
Sometimes they're angry. One time, I don't even remember. See, I have a hard time remembering what I do. The room is funny. One cat was like afraid of the room where the litter box was. One time the cat didn't like the litter box. Another time the cat doesn't like the woman's boyfriend. So the cat's going to pee on her bed as long as her boyfriend sleeps over. Like,
so the cat knows that this is a weapon, that it can pee on things in it.
Yes.
Yeah, the cat's aware of that.
Yeah, cats are definitely aware of that. That's my... Ryan thinks that's like hilarious.
Yeah.
She's 6'6" and helping cats pee in the litter box. So it's a pretty good record.
I know, it's crazy, right?
It's a little crazy, but it's no crazier than her decision to join the Mormon Church.
And I was like, there's no way I'm becoming Mormon. Not for me. Mormons are, well, because I was such a feminist. I mean, I still am really a feminist, but I don't like the way Mormons treat women. And that was it. I wasn't interested. And I was swimming in the pool. And usually I can tell when there's like a voice in my head and then when there's an external voice. And one of the two times in my life, one was a voice telling me to move to California. And the other, I'm swimming in the pool and I hear this voice that said, join the Mormon Church. And I stop swimming in the middle of a lap and I'm looking around for who's talking to me, and there was nobody there. And I realized, oh, I just heard a voice. And I said, you know, I was pretty angry, actually. Frankly, I don't really get that angry, but I was like, are you joking? Like, you're telling me to do what? And I said, show me truth. And I saw this image of Joseph Smith and these golden plates, which I didn't even know what the golden plates were. Obviously, my Mormon education was lacking. When I got out of the pool, I called Ryan and I told him, like, hey, I saw this vision after I had this experience. Like, what does that mean? And he laughed at me, basically. And I was really angry for like a week, I think. I was like, there's no way I'm doing this. But, you know, when you hear something like that, I've learned, listen. And when I really started to read about Mormonism and investigate it, I was like, oh my gosh, like, this is where I belong.
And one of the things that makes her feel like she belongs is a certain kinship she feels to the prophet Joseph Smith, or should I say, the psychic Joseph Smith.
I also, I think, identify pretty strongly with Joseph Smith, and his experiences, I guess, ring similar to my own. I kind of hold that close to my heart in a way, because not like I'm Joseph Smith, I'm not saying that, but it can be difficult to know the things that I know, and sometimes have to keep your mouth shut. I think that's one of the hardest things about being like I am. I'm getting tears in my eyes just thinking about it.
Yeah, I can hear it. That's nice.
It's hard to know, like, you know, it's definitely provided a lot of challenges, and so I think that sometimes knowing someone else is like that is just really helpful, and I, you know, and to know, I don't think he always made the right choices as a human, but to know that I have a gift from God and I'm supposed to use it, and I feel like he held that same truth, and so I feel like that is definitely part of the draw.
These clips you just heard were from an interview I did with Krista and Ryan back in March 2012. I interviewed them for the podcast Mormon Expression Voices. You can hear the full interview there. It's episode 19. That was the very first time I spoke with Krista, and to be honest, I went into that interview pretty skeptical. Ryan had contacted us about being interviewed, and no one else wanted to interview them, but I jumped at the opportunity, mainly because I wanted to hear firsthand what a Mormon psychic would say. I don't know exactly what I was expecting, but she quickly won me over. You can hear it for yourself. She's smart, articulate, self-reflective. She's getting a PhD in music history and women's studies from Princeton, and she thinks her claims are nuts too. But it's her experience, and I think she's sincere. I don't know what it means, but then again, neither does she.
The way I always interpret things is, well, it's how I see it. It's how I conceive of people, and whether that's truth or that's just the way that I can understand it in the human form, as long as it, you know, because I feel like existence and God and all these things that we're always asking questions about, it's just way too vast to understand. You know, if I tried to sit around and understand what I do and how I do it, I would go crazy. Like, I don't know, you know, it's just the universe is this hugely vast thing. So if that's the way that it can appear to me, and that's the way, you know, I have enough, you know, as a historian, I'm like, I like my evidence, and I have enough evidence of being right and of helping people that, you know, I don't really doubt that anymore.
So I decided to test her out. I had listened to her talk about being a psychic in the interview, but I hadn't actually heard her doing the whole psychic spiel. So about a week after the interview, I asked her if she'd do a personal reading for me. She agreed. And I went into that one pretty guarded as well. But she told me some things about my dead friend who had committed suicide years ago that really nailed him perfectly. And she told me interesting things about my spiritual journey, and she fielded more questions about Joseph Smith. And that was what I really found fascinating. I thought I'd studied a lot about Joseph Smith and pretty much exhausted all the possibilities of what he could have been. Genuine prophet, fallen prophet, scoundrel, fraud. But she opened up some new possibilities that really intrigued me. And her method for channeling information was really different from what I had experienced in our interview. So I asked if she'd do another reading that I could publish as a podcast. And this time, I asked my sister Melissa to join, and I also asked fellow infant Tom Perry to join me. I thought Tom would be especially interested to pick her psychic brain about Brigham Young and his role in the Mountain Meadows Massacre. But we talked about a lot more than just that. Too much, maybe.
All right, so, you know, what what I thought would be interesting to talk about, and there's several directions that we could go with the conversation, but one of the things that was interesting to me in your Voices interview, and then also when we did the reading with me last week, were things that you said about Joseph Smith having like a pure crystal heart, you know, and that his revelations
Can I just
came
start?
Really
I'm like
clear.
Getting stuff.
Oh yeah,
so
go.
Can I just like go?
You do.
Okay.
It. Yeah, we'll follow you.
They're saying, first of all, we must thank you for gathering here this evening.
Let me interrupt for a second here. Do you see what I mean about the difference in her methodology? This is Krista when she's channeling. If you could see her, her eyes sort of flutter and roll up into the back of her head when she talks, and she speaks in a very different cadence, as if she's simply relaying information from a secondary source. Don't bother asking who or what that is. She doesn't know. She doesn't really want to know. The closest she's come to explaining is that they're ascended souls who, rather than becoming one with God, which is the grand purpose of it all, have lingered around to help out other souls, us, as we move through this soul journey, body after body, life after life, progressing or digressing depending on what we learn or take away from each of our different experiences. So these are her guides who speak through her. They show her images and she tries to interpret them. And even she admits, it can get a little weird.
Making time for spiritual inquiry outside of the realms of like being in control, they're showing is often takes up such a small place within our hearts and indeed within our lives that time spent on reflecting on your personal journey with God is indeed worth commending. That this path you have turned onto has not taken you up on a pulpit into a place of ego, but rather on an inward spiral, one that indeed continues into the realm of infinity. That is to say, this spiral never ends. This idea that you can burn off all sins of the outside world if you continue down the correct roadway is indeed a false imprisonment of the human mind.
Weird, huh? So this mention of sin got me thinking. Most of the things that get defined as sin seem fairly relativistic to me. Culture-based, traditional, man-made, physical as opposed to spiritual. So if Krista is really tapping into some kind of universal soul energy, what would they consider as sin in an eternal spiritual sense?
They're saying a spiritual sin is any denial of God.
Does that mean that you have to believe in God to deny in God?
There are many people who do not believe in God who actually act as though they believe in God. There is no greater sin than like an action done just for how it looks.
So basically, it sounds like hypocrisy and personal integrity are pretty sinful behaviors, spiritually speaking. We talked a bit more about this, and then the discussion turned to Joseph Smith, and apparently, the church he set up was all about following your own personal connection to God rather than rote obedience for obedience's sake.
And that there's far too much focus in these latter days on appearing to follow down the correct path rather than taking this spiral journey within the heart. That was what was special about Joseph Smith. That is the way the church started and has gone away from, is that it was about the inward spiral towards infinity. That is what we call a journey into the heart of man. When we talk of Joseph Smith having a purity of heart, that is what we mean, that his decisions were, for the most part, always in union, that he received a calling from God and did that calling. Did he always make the correct decision? No. But in a sense, any time we see a man following the voice of God, we see a purity in its highest form.
So can I ask some specifics about Joseph Smith's revelations then?
Yes.
Well, let's start with the first big contribution that Joseph Smith made to the world that is kind of the keystone of the religion, and that's the Book of Mormon. So did Joseph Smith find golden plates?
In a physical sense, no. Like, do I think he touched golden? No, he did not hold golden plates in his hands and touch them. Did he see golden plates and read this information off a golden plate? Yes, he did. In the same way that many of his revelations were things that he saw rather than heard.
In a vision?
Yeah, they came to him in visions, just as they come to others, sometimes in sound and hearing. That was his way of communicating with the other world. It's like I see him staring at objects in order to try to see things, because he could see them, but they weren't always there, kind of thing.
So there's stories of him carrying the golden plates, running with them. You know, he gives their dimensions, their weight. What was that?
I think he thought he was running with them. I mean, I see him running with them, but it's more of this vision. I don't know how real it was, or if it was some kind of dream experience. It feels like they're saying, yeah, it's some kind of dream experience. To him, that was reality. So to hate him for this story is to, you know, it's to hate him for his truth.
So why has there been so much emphasis placed on the three witnesses, the eight witnesses?
They're, like, really mad about this. They're like, there's far too much focus on the physical being and on this idea that somehow Joseph Smith came into life a perfected individual and no one else can attain these spiritual achievements. When you see yourself often taking the same spiritual journey that Joseph Smith went on, and they're talking to you, Glenn, specifically, but they're saying, the purpose of this man coming in was that at the time everyone could see his imperfections. Those are the ones that are chosen for prophets and prophetesses, the ones who wear the scars of life and wear them proudly, the ones who see that their views of the world and of God are tainted by their experiences and the world around them, and that they're always, like, willing to accept that they may be wrong and that they may be misguided, the ones that are always checking in with the Lord to ensure that they are on the correct path. And in this, you can see how far, far astray we are at this moment in time. I think they're talking about the church. In that those held up as the righteous ones are seen without blemish and seen, I'm seeing like editing on a photo, like someone editing a photo on Photoshop or something, that every word that comes out of their mouth is seen as real, as true, as sacred, when those aren't even words from God. They are words from the man himself. Joseph Smith was chosen precisely because of this kind of innocent imperfection and the ability to listen.
So what happened? I mean, when did things start going astray? And maybe that's too broad of a question, but what was the deal with polygamy?
They're saying polygamy was a sin, wasn't inspired by God, but rather inspired by a group of people. Was there around Brigham Young? I'm kind of saying, is that what Brigham Young looks like? Like, you can see what I can see. Would that make any sense? I don't know if it's Brigham Young or not. It's some dude, and he has people around him, but I kind of got Brigham Young. And it kind of was contagious in that it polluted what Joseph Smith knew to be true. It's like he followed it, but he didn't follow it. I don't really know what that means.
Well, let's talk a little bit about Brigham Young, since Glenn's talking about when things go astray. Let's talk about Brigham Young. So
They're saying sinner in the highest way.
Apostasy. In the highest way.
Yeah, you want to know where everything went astray, that he planted these seeds in Joseph Smith, I'm seeing too, that kind of corrupted him some, made him need to die when he did. Joseph Smith, because he wasn't carrying anything further, but rather like walking backwards with the church. It was the beginning of the search for power in Joseph Smith and the search for control.
Do you think Brigham Young, with so much, you know, I don't know, maliciousness around him, do you think...
It's not maliciousness. Urge for power, they're saying.
Urge for power. Do you think that power could have taken him as far as to commit murder, or at least conspire to commit murder?
I think he did. commit murder. Okay. Or there's some fishy stuff around that. It's lying. It's covering stuff up. I don't know if he physically went in and killed someone, but I'm seeing kind of plans to eliminate the competition.
Wow.
For control. Does that make sense in any way, shape, or form?
Yeah.
Ask what you want to ask, Tom.
I guess I'm a little worried about Brigham Young, because it sounds like he's a pretty heinous guy. Did he have any good qualities about
him? It's not just him. They're saying everyone always has good qualities, but it's not. I'm not just seeing. It's like somehow there's a group of people all around too that's causing everything, and that kind of causes Joseph Smith to get sucked into this group. I mean, Brigham Young, they're saying, is the roots of the tree, but he's not the only one there. There's somehow a group of people around him that kind of, they look black. It's like this kind of black hole. They were saying he was magnetic, drew people into his crooked ways. His search for power has caused him, I'm seeing him like walking up a staircase, but he's walking on people's heads. It's kind of an interesting...
Okay,
I mean, they're not like captated, but he's like stepping up. He's using other people in order to get into power. And he's like, there's like a facade he puts on as like this. And I don't know if he wore different clothes. There's something about his clothing that he dressed especially to make him look like some big, powerful religious leader. It's like they're saying he took lessons from the kind of church revivalists. There's something in there. Like he watched these church revivals or something else going on at that time and took lessons on how to have this show and how to draw people in and how to bring people into him magnetically, they're saying. So we had a kind of personality draw that also allowed him to easily manipulate those around him. You wanted to know when the church first went astray, the day that Joseph and Brigham Young met.
Wow.
Oh, really? So here you go, Glenn. Did Brigham Young order the massacre in Mountain Meadows?
I think he has to do part of it, but it's not like directly. There's something again where it's this kind of conspiracy between several. I'm seeing three key players. I don't know, and I'm not sure Brigham Young is in there, but I don't think he's the head guy. He's involved. I have no idea even what that is. Does that make any sense?
Yeah, I mean, from the information that I gather, and this, you know, just from historical stuff, that he was involved in some way or shape or form.
What I'm getting is there's somebody at the head of it. Brigham Young is the second most important, but I'm seeing them in a triangle, and there's somebody else on the triangle, too, that kind of, I feel like kind of knew, oh, this isn't a great thing to do, but kind of did it anyway. They're saying that happened a lot when you were around Brigham Young. You found yourself doing things that you knew were wrong, and that was like this electric pull that pulled Joseph Smith in, and that eventually resulted in his death, I guess, kind of. That's why he needed to be martyred. They're saying without Brigham Young, he could have lived well into his 80s, but it was necessary that he be killed off to retain the purity of his teaching.
I have a question about that, if we can continue.
Yeah.
Well, I want to know what Joseph Smith is doing right now. What did he do after he died? And then we'll go to your question, Melissa.
Okay.
You want to know what they just said? They said he died. I don't think they really want to answer that question right now. Sorry, Glenn.
Okay.
They wanted to hear my question.
Okay.
That's true. So did I.
Yeah.
Well, if Joseph Smith has been chosen, and, you know, he's kind of the more pure vessel, and, you know, if the church has truth that is to be brought to us to bless our lives, I guess I'm just curious maybe why God didn't intervene and have Joseph Smith kind of overpower Brigham Young. Like, why was Brigham Young able to kind of create the martyrdom, and, or I mean, not create, but
they said God intervened and had Joseph Smith killed. One, in another way, they're saying that Joseph's part of his beauty and part of his purity was that he was kind of wimpy. I feel like, and easily persuaded. No human vessel is perfect, especially when dealing with this kind of massive amount of information. So did Joseph Smith get signs? I'm asking if that Brigham Young was wrong. And they're saying yes, but he also, he feels like kind of a wimpy person, and that Brigham Young was way more like vibrant and powerful, and God can only do so much. But they're saying, what was God supposed to do? Strike Brigham Young by lightning, or allow Joseph Smith and others to learn
what they ought to do. If it weren't for Brigham Young, like, none of us right here would be on the particular path that we're on. I see a branch kind of splitting off of the Mormon church, honestly, and forming something else. I don't know if it's a bunch of people leaving with a similar mindset, or I don't know. I don't really know how that works.
Okay, that is a lot of psychic talking. And there's more. But let's take a little break, shall we?
Man is born, man lives, man dies, and it's all vanity.
How about a little slice of cake as a sort of mental palate cleanser? Consider this our intermission. I'll be right back.
And that's about the way it is in the merry-go-round. You get on. We got colored TV, but it still isn't satisfying.
All right, that feels better. So let's get back to the conversation with Krista. We haven't heard a lot from my sister or from Tom, but they chimed in a bit more as the discussion moved along. At one point, Krista's spirit guides suggested that doubting and questioning were a good thing. A little strange, considering that earlier they had said that a spiritual sin is any denial of God. So Tom asked for clarification.
I was just going to ask, so they're saying that it's a good thing to doubt and question? And
they're saying it's the highest good. Acquiring knowledge is part of what Joseph Smith was teaching us as well. That it is required by us to learn everything we can while on earth. They're saying truth is always spouting forth from the mouth of man. It is our requirement in living our lives that we filter out some truths from that which is false. It's this always being open to. I'm seeing someone holding out some kind of strainer, looks like a pasta strainer, and it's like, okay, I'm going to filter out what is true. It doesn't matter where it comes from.
I have a question.
Yeah.
Is that okay? It kind of going back to like one of the first things we talked about with the sin, you know, and the sin being not believing in God. And I guess I hope I can ask it correctly, but. You know, just because a lot of people who have grown up in the church, myself included, and, you know, we grow up kind of with this one narrative, and then when we find out that it's not exactly, you know, what we thought about it, it makes you doubt and question everything. And, you know, obviously we have a lot of friends who, after kind of going through the crisis of faith, have felt in their hearts that they're being true to themselves and they don't believe in God anymore because of
this. Saying, I'm just going to interrupt you. They're saying,
yeah, please,
sorry.
You know what I'm
saying. They're saying, you know, you're not on the path to truth if just because you're believing in God. It's really not about believing in God. They're saying some people are on the finest path of truth not believing in God. The search for truth in itself is a journey given of God, whether or not the journeyer believes in God. It is not a requirement to believe in God. It is not a requirement to blindly follow anything. They're saying empty, empty words. It's search. Life is about searching. Life is about journeying.
And what I got from what you said earlier was that the sin is when you go against what you really feel. So if you really feel there's not a God and you're consistent with that, you're not in sin.
But they're saying sometimes feelings go astray, you know, in which you're so polluted by what you think to be true, that's what comes to your heart as truth. This more openness in kind of allowing yourself to open up to the possibility of anything, and then feeling, and then reasoning, and always, I think, having some kind of doubt is more true to this faith. It's the openness when you're willing to get an answer kind of either way, when you're willing to get any type of answer.
Did you have anything more that you wanted to add along those lines, Melissa?
No, I feel like she or they answered the question.
Okay.
Very well.
She or they. Who knows who?
How about you, Tom? Do you have any burning questions?
I guess my question would be, the spirits or the sense that you're getting from the other side, I guess, Chris, is that fair to say?
Whatever it is, I don't even know. Sure.
Do they ask you questions? Like, Do they ever say, hey, ask Glenn what he thinks about this kind of thing?
Sometimes I feel like they answer. I mean, they don't say directly. Maybe that's because I'm not willing to receive it. Ask Glenn this. Sometimes I feel like they answer questions he had. Like, I have that happen a lot with people I'm working with, too. Like, I answer their questions before they ask them kind of thing. So they must kind of know, but I don't know. I don't know.
Okay, fair enough.
So what do they say about the current church leadership, like President Monson?
Oh, gosh. Well, let me just tell you that today I was in primary. Oh, yes. And, like, they're holding up this picture of Thomas Monson, and I almost barfed every time I saw his face. Like, I could not look at him without getting the worst stomach ache. And I'm like, I don't know if he has something going wrong with his stomach or if he just feels that bad. Because then I'm like, okay, well, let me look at him. And he has, like, all these black snakes in his stomach. It was nasty. Wow. And that was my experience in primary today.
Wow.
with Thomas Monson.
Follow the prophet. Follow.
Oh, my gosh. No! Anyway, what were you asking? Sorry, I had to go on my own little rant there.
What did they think about Thomas Monson and, like, the leading of our church? Is that what you mean, Glenn?
I told you this leadership is false. It is a structure built upon... It's like this big old skyscraper built upon this rock, kind of like sideways. they're saying it's about power. That all the members of priesthood, like, I'm seeing them, like, shooting blessings out of their hands, right? It looks like a very, like, crazy cartoon, though. That they all shoot blessings out of their hand is, like, a falsity, and it's kind of hilarious. They're like, oh, this is really funny. that, you know, this idea, because some of the greatest blessings come from the hands of women, and it's like these men thinking they're giving blessings and they're doing nothing. at all. They're saying that some, like, 15-year-old boy has in him more spiritual power than Mother Teresa is indeed quite laughable.
Since we're hitting the big ones, and again, you know, if this ever airs and, you know, any true believers actually listen to it, just for the record, is homosexuality a sin?
They're saying any time people come together out of love for each other, and love for ones they're raising, we cannot say that there is sin present in that union. The soul has no sex, they're saying. And by that,
you mean no gender?
I guess that's what they mean. But I said gender, and they said no sex. And I think they're talking about... Because I'm like, well, you know, sex and gender aren't the same. So they're saying it doesn't. The soul has no sex in that.
So that's just the body that's having sex. It's not the soul that's having sex.
No. They're not talking about sex as an intercourse.
So it's more like souls connecting with each other regardless of gender.
Yeah, except they're saying gender is a different thing. So, well, I think that's my feminist background where I'm like, gender is how you act and sex is your actual physical parts. So they're like, the soul has no sex, as in your physical parts aren't, like, attached to your soul. Yes, that's what they're saying. That's exactly what we mean. The physical, I'm seeing... They're showing, this is terrible, the image of a soul with, like, male genitalia stuck on it. And they're like, that is not what it looks like.
Like Mr. Potato Head.
With a giant penis, yes.
Yeah. awesome. I agree.
They're saying that we focus on these unions that we choose as these divine things, like husband and wife or that, and, like, some of our strongest soul connections we know are like parent and child and anything like that. And that we ignore those kind of unions, allowing a kinds of abuse, they're saying, and kinds of power games, and that we hold up man and woman as this divine connection when life is full of these divine connections that are in a lot of ways really undervalued. And they're saying part of that is, like, they're getting into, like, that parents' possession over their children, and that somehow their children belong to them. They're saying particularly within this church of which we speak, the power of parents over their children is indeed a lot further from truth than two men being married.
Wow.
this lack of respect for a soul smaller and younger than your own, this forcing them. I'm seeing them kind of like encaged between fences. It's like cattle going into the slaughterhouse, you know, that we kind of march them down a path without giving their soul wings. So I guess you're making them into a cow rather than a butterfly. This sense of control, this idea that the parent is the one that leads you along, and that this soul is not one to be respected, but rather to be controlled and to put down an appropriate path, is indeed far more of a sin than that two men love each other. Does anybody have a question about that?
I just think that was most beautiful. Like, that made me tear up just thinking of my boys and like, wow. Because I felt that when they were first born. I mean, not to go off on my own personal tangent, but I've heard this from a lot of parents that you feel, you know, this spirit, this really strong spirit. And I felt like, you know, my son, when he was born, that he almost felt smarter than I was, you know, even as this newborn. But then, of course, as I get older and it's more my fear taking over of, you know, I'm going to screw him up somehow or something, that I need to keep him in line and, like, I need to give him wings. So that was just beautiful.
What worried about is not that you're going to screw them up, but that they're somehow screwing themselves up.
Yeah.
Saying that our beautiful souls on a journey. And I'm seeing kind of this is really grotesque, but again, I'm seeing this cow image and like a parent beating the cow to go down the right path. And I think
the idea that there's one path for everyone.
That we've all felt that in some way, or that the parent is in control of the child's spiritual journey, and the parent is there. I'm seeing them assisting, like holding the hand, or actually like boosting someone up, like when someone's like stepping up on a rock and you put your hand out to give them something to lean on. Like, that's what you are. And in that, we are journeying together. And that, they're saying, is how we object to how the Mormon faith teaches their children, by beating them into obedience and like abandoning them oftentimes if they do not follow the path exactly. That there is one true way, and that if you step aside from the worn, they're saying ugly, it's an ugly worn path. Like, if you step out of that, seeking more beauty and seeking more adventure, you're wrong. But who would want to stay on this? It's like this dirt path with no scenery or anything. Who would want to stay on that at all? It's not showing us beauty. It's promising it after death, but it shows us none in the present life.
Wow.
Did you have a question, Tom?
Who's going to win the NCAA basketball tournament?
It's horrible at sports.
I'm horrible at sports. Oh, I've like tried, like Ryan tries to get me to do it, right? And I'm like, this team feels good. And I think if I feels good, I get nicer, because I always pick the losing team. They must be nicer people. I always, like, hands down, I can never pick the winner. I always pick the loser. Always. So I get
it. Well, now you know the opposite. So
I guess
whichever you pick.
Like,
just
this team feels better. And I'm like, wait a minute. Like, what does that even mean? They're like, nicer. I donated more money to charity today. That's the team I'll pick. I don't know. I'm terrible at that.
Well, to get back on the Mormon theme.
Yeah, thanks. Thank God.
And party.
Jeez.
Yeah, I know.
Reaching the spot. Sorry about that.
Well, I'm curious about the future, because Joseph Smith taught of a second coming. He taught about the millennium. You know, signs of the times. It's called the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. So was that something that was based on truth? Is there going to be an end of the world? Is there going to be a second coming of Jesus Christ? What is
there,
that about?
You want to know the answer that I got, and that's about it. The second coming is now. Okay, so now I'm asking, what does that mean exactly? They're saying we're all figuratively holding pieces of the Christ. Will he appear as his body out of his grave? Like, no. But this idea that
more are coming to be in union with the spirit is true. It's like everything's speeding up in a way, though, and burning. In that sense, we're all embodying fire, in that we seem more on a whole, like, disillusioned with lies we've been told. And in that, you know, we're more on fire. So that's what we mean when the second coming is now.
All right. I did have a question. You know, I explained to one of my friends a little bit about the reading that we had last week, you know, how one of the things that you're able to do, Krista, is channel dead people, that there's also reincarnation. And he said, what if you try to channel somebody, but they've already been reincarnated?
Oh, that happens. It does. You can tell, too. It's weird. Dead people feel different than live people feel different than people have been dead and have been reincarnated.
So you could have somebody come to you and say, I want to talk to Uncle Joe, and you would feel Uncle Joe's not there anymore. He's alive.
But you can still talk to him?
I've told people, you can still talk to them. I don't know how this whole time thing works, but it's, you can talk to them. And sometimes the people know the person, you know, that's a weird one.
That was my question. Just in the interview that you guys did for the Voices podcast, you said something about that it's beautiful that our souls are all still kind of connected. And I guess I got the impression that you kind of have like this group of friends that you
like
travel
lost.
Through your different. Yes. Yeah, yeah. You travel through your different lives together. Is that how it is? And like, so like maybe my husband like now would have been like my best friend in another life, or like how, I don't know. I guess I just was fascinated with that.
Yeah.
Idea.
I think it's interesting because, like if you're looking at problems in relationships, too, it's like, you know, sometimes lives come up where you were with this person and they killed you or something, and that's why you always have this weird feeling around them. Or, you know, we kind of come in, and it'll come up, like, oh, you've been sisters, and you've been this, and you've been, you know, parent and child and grandparent and best friend, and it's different with different people. So, you know that feeling you get when you meet someone and you're like, gosh, like, I get along with them instantly.
Yeah.
Like, a lot of times it's because, I mean, the way that I see it, and who knows how close this is to truth, but it's, you know, it's because you do know them before. And you're, you know, always there to, and people have, like, karmic debts, too. That'll come up in reading. So it's like, you know, this person came in, like, a lot of times, when you come in as a parent of someone, like your kids, you owe them for something they did for you, you know, so that's why you're taking care of them. And you're there to teach them something because they did something for you. It tends to be a debt thing, or at least that's how it, you know, appears to me, that you've somehow wronged them and you need to right them, so you're going to take care of them. And then it's like you have things to resolve with people. So sometimes, you know, you've resolved that thing and then you're moving on. Or when people get married and get divorced, sometimes it's like, okay, you'll have to solve this problem in another life. But sometimes it's like, okay, everything you needed to go through, you went through with this person and it's just kind of done. You know, it's like, okay, moving on.
So all these things, you know, with, you know, coming back, living life over again, owing people karmic debts, is this all part of an eternal progression, you know, like Joseph Smith taught, moving towards becoming a god?
They're saying when we say families are forever, they are forever in that way. As any kind of family being some kind of soul connection. So it is an eternal progression. Not everyone always progresses. Then people seem to stay in the same place all the time. They're saying, you know, you find people who are kind of very old souls and have been through. Okay, I'll tell you what they're really saying. They're saying you in particular are an old soul and have been sent to teach many people these kind of spiritual truths.
Well, see, if I'm an old soul, then it seems like I'm a failure that I didn't move on.
You're not an old soul.
Oh, okay. Who's the old soul?
They're talking about me, sorry.
Oh, you. Oh, okay.
No, they're kind of, you're in the mid, sorry. Yeah. I didn't want to shoot you down here. But
that's all right.
But they're like in the middle of... And you're choosing whether to go up kind of on a more spiritual journey or to kind of go down. This life seems to be kind of pivotal for you, actually, about whether you'll kind of ascend, Glenn, to a higher spiritual realm or whether you're going to kind of go backwards. And I feel like you're moving toward the ascension point.
So the question that I had, though, was like these older souls, I mean, the longer you've been around, do you advance to something more? Do you advance to godhood?
Like, is there an ending point or a final goal?
You become like Elohim, to put it in the Mormon.
They're saying you become a fullness of being, and in that you stop being one and rather become part of this kind of huge union of God. That we're all very separate in form, and you just kind of blend.
Do you lose your independence in that way? Because that, I mean, that kind of worries me. Like, there would be no more Tom.
Every time you're out of body, you lose independence in a sense. But when you're kind of done, I'm seeing this ascension and then this big yellow ball of light. And there's Jesus. No, and there's, I do see Jesus there actually, but it's like this fullness of being in which you're not coming back and can live constantly in the spiritual realm without, you know, this kind of back and forth between human and spirit and without the individual. By this, they're saying by the time you're done being incarnated, you're done being an individual.
So is that the celestial kingdom?
They're saying your ideas of the celestial kingdom are misguided.
Yeah.
They're saying we can... I'm kind of getting a little tired, so they're saying we can talk about that another day.
Yeah.
Sorry.
No problem.
That's all right. Talking to Glenn will make anybody tired.
Yeah. So did Tom and I know each other in others' lives where
many times. You want me to look at it for you?
Yeah. Yeah, look at it.
Actually, if I could clear something between the two of you, I see you guys actually fighting each other. You're like wrestling each other in a circle.
is it a good wrestling? Or?
Did I win?
No.
Yeah.
Did you win? No, actually,
you did not. Oh, yeah.
So I believe it then. I believe it then.
Do you guys ever feel like you're like bickering a lot over nothing? I'm serious.
Yes. Totally. That's why I'm laughing so hard.
I feel like he picks on me for nothing.
Because it's kind of like, you kind of have this, there now I'm getting, okay, I'm going to take that out. And then I'm getting brothers actually. And in that life you were really close, but there was a little bit of
I there still? Were you there? My brother too?
No, you weren't that life. I can look at you and.
That's my question. Like how, like, okay. Not to be like totally Mormony, but like
now you guys are married. Wait, I'm still on Glenn and Tom. Sorry.
Tom and I were married at one point.
Yeah, you're like really old married people. And
you were doing the dishes. I remember.
Who was the guy?
No, Glenn was the female, and you're like,
of course.
And you're standing. You have like this wooden broom thing. And you're like yelling at him, and you're waving it in the air, kind of chasing after him. And the floors are like dirt. It's very interesting. But
is he Joseph Smith and I'm Emma?
No. Oh, okay. You were one of the other wives. No, I'm joking. Okay, I'm gonna take that out. Cool. That feels better. I hope you guys fight less, but enjoy each other more. What did you want to know? Sorry, Melissa.
Oh, no, you're fine. I guess I just, you know, in the church, you always kind of get this pressure that, like, you know, you're supposed to multiply and replenish, right? Well, I have two little boys, and I feel really good with just keeping it two and that I can handle it. But, you know, in the church, you're always like, oh, but there's other spirits around you, and they need a good home. And, like, the whole guilt thing about, like, having a ton of kids, like, what's that about?
Well, are you asking about yourself?
No, because I feel peace about not having more kids, but I guess...
Are you sure you're not going to have one more kid? A girl? Sorry.
I've been pretty sure.
No.
Like, but if I don't, like, is that little girl screwed then?
No, but it's possible pressure. For you, so... Think about it. Sorry, I'm airing your public information here, but
Greg's not gonna like that.
Well, she didn't say it has to be Greg.
Oh, come on now.
Okay. No, are these people screwed? No, you just come in some other way. I mean,
but like maybe she'd be my niece, or like, you know, because you're still kind of connected with people. I guess is how I'm curious about it.
No, I think you're really connected with people. Yeah, they come in this lifetime or in some other lifetime, or I feel like it's kind of set by the time it's just kind of, you can just kind of tell. I don't know.
I mean, sometimes with people, like, you get a maybe. Maybe you'll have this kid and maybe you won't. And other times it's like, these are your three kids. Like,
so you think I'm a maybe or I've got three kids?
I take the fifth.
How about Tom and I? Are we done fathering children or are there more in reserve?
Wait, Tom, I'm like seeing you and Tom together, and I'm like, well, I just don't see that at all. But I was like,
good.
You're like, Tom and I, are we?
Yeah, that's not what I meant.
Individually, with their own respective partners.
Yeah, I'm still chasing them with the broom.
Yeah, there we go. Tom, I don't think you're having any more kids. Glenn, I think you might have two more kids.
Wow.
Good luck.
Will you name one of them Tom Jr. then, Glenn?
Yeah.
I think that's only fair.
Does that necessarily mean it has to be by birth, or could it be through marriage?
No, it could be through marriage, or this stuff. I mean, who knows? It could be through marriage. I see, I see Glenn having been a father figure or something, two more kids. Good luck with that, Glenn.
Yeah.
You think you're getting him out of the house, but no. No.
I'm good at it. I'm good. I lift him up like I put him on a step. I don't beat him like a cow.
You really do. You're
really
good.
Not what I see, Glenn.
Oh,
and
yeah.
I
don't. Well, I have a selfish question, but I don't know if I should just like hire you to do my own personal reading.
For it.
Well, okay, again, this is totally vain. So if Glenn, if you do the podcast, you're gonna have to edit the part out.
Now really. What kind of older brother would I be if I actually did edit this part out? Okay, look, we've gone a little over an hour, so I'll go ahead and cut it here. But if this part happens to show up as a little Easter egg at the tail end of the fade-out, well, maybe that's just a little payback for some minor past-life trauma when, I don't know, my sister was my executioner during the French Revolution or something. But for those of you who made it all the way through to the end here, I hope you enjoyed what you heard. I sure enjoyed recording it. And I'll make the full interview available through our Facebook page for anyone who wants to hear the bits that got left on the cutting room floor. And I recorded several other conversations with Krista where we go into more detail on some of the topics that barely scratch the surface on this one. Things like the nature of God, the nature of souls, the distinction between ghosts, guardian angels, spirit guides, the devil, evil spirits, or negative energies. More about past lives on this planet and others. The role of Jesus in the atonement, the second coming, the end of the world, a discussion where Krista channeled Emma Smith, future scientific advancements with artificial intelligence, and of course the little 5-year-old ghost named Clara who hangs out upstairs in my kid's bathroom. Some really bizarre and interesting stuff. Maybe I'll get to those in future episodes. Until then, anyone for the closing prayer?
You can't understand it. It's going so loud. It's so warm. Glenn, you're not allowed to roll your eyes on me with this. But, like, I feel like I have a problem. I can't even keep it straight. I would like to lose like 10 more pounds and I can't. And I exercise every morning and I eat fairly healthy and I feel like, okay, to be personal, like, sorry, Tom, like I get really gassy. Like, I don't know what is going on.
Do you
like,
eat
I just,
too many grains?
Yeah, I like, think I might. I think, and that's what I've been thinking. I've been wondering if I'm celiac and I just got a book.
There's something wrong with the way that you process grains, actually, I feel like.
So it's not like in a former life I was like starving and so now my body like won't like
no,
like,
I did some nature. Corrections on your like that lower part of your abdomen kind of.
Is the wheat stuff affecting my face too?
Yes, it is. Your skin is like yeah, you're having trouble processing it. Yeah.
Okay,
your
good.
Your skin's not so good, yeah.
It might be all that gas too. Who knows?
Tom, you were once a brother and apparently a brother-in-law, so, I mean, hey, I figured we were close enough, right?
This was the this is the first time I've heard a woman actually admit out loud that they have gas, so.
Oh, good night.
You have no idea the kind of things that I hear about people. Oh, my gosh. I had somebody call one time because they had a rash all over their butt. No. Aww. Kidding.
It was so funny. I'm like, I'm working on a butt rash. Like, it was weird.
And it's all vanity.